Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Kristi Noem has done it again. You remember her. Governor of South Dakota? South Dakota. That's the one. Yeah. Has a book out now, just came out. Has a few errors in it. Well, one was an error of judgment. She goes into some detail, you recall, telling the story of killing her 14-month-old dog. She says it's a working dog. It's not a puppy, 14 months old. Then, week after that, she had claimed that she had met the head of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, and confronted him. That didn't happen. That's being taken out of the book, says the publisher. So get those early copies now. They're collector's items. You can buy a house in the south of France with what you can sell that collector's item for. And now this week, she's in a little tussle with France. She says she was supposed to attend an event with the president, Macron, but she didn't like something he said about the Middle East, so she stiffed him. France, the government there, says, what? That didn't happen. She was never supposed to meet with Macron. I think at this point, there's a readily available exit for Governor Noem. No G. Noem. She should just come clean and admit that the whole book was written by AI. And you know how many mistakes they make. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sunshine, baby, whenever you smile, but I call you stormy today. All of a sudden, that old rain's falling down, and my world is cloudy and gray. You yesterday's love was like a warm summer breeze, but like the weather, you changed. Now things are dreary, baby, and it's windy and cold.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you. You, I'm talking to you, to this edition of the show. And now, news of the warm. It's happening right now. That's why it's news.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Record ocean temperatures suggest the seas are warming faster than expected. The impacts will be felt from polar ice shelves to coastal cities across the globe. This according to the BBC. The world's oceans, the BBC says, are like a planet-sized battery. They absorb huge amounts of heat, which is then released slowly. So far, our oceans have soaked up over 90% of the heat trapped in the Earth's atmosphere by rising greenhouse gas emissions. Recently, their rate of warming, the oceans that is, has been dramatic. Every day since late March of last year, global ocean surface temperatures have set new records for the hottest temperature ever recorded on that date. On 47 of those days, temperatures have also surpassed previous highs by the largest margin seen in the satellite era. In February of this year, the world had breached 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming for surface air temperatures for a full year. In some regions last year, ocean temperatures were similar to those expected if overall global warming of surface air temperatures reached 3 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. That would be quicker ocean heating than expected. This rapid heating raises a question for scientists. Why is recent ocean warming even greater than models suggest? Quote, the step change in ocean temperatures over last year is huge, unquote Haley Fowler, professor of climate change impacts at Newcastle University in the UK. He continues, the fact we can't simulate these step change increases and understand why it's happening is terrifying, unquote. What is clear is that ocean warming is already having damaging effects on people and ecosystems alike. Summer last year, boys off the coast of Florida recorded temperatures that were warmer than a hot tub. Coral reefs are currently undergoing their fourth planet-wide bleaching event. Well, so is Stormy Daniels, but that's another story. It's set to be the most extensive yet. Other impacts are less talked about, from deoxygenation of the deep seas to more intense rain in the skies above all indicate that planet temperatures are hitting records that are destabilizing the planet. Two factors are primarily responsible for the past year's record ocean heat, says an oceanographer at NOAA. The first is the atmosphere's ever-rising greenhouse gas concentrations. The second was last year's major El Niño event, in which warmer-than-average surface waters in the tropical Pacific led to increased evaporation and a vast transfer of heat to the atmosphere. Other much weaker influences may have also played a role, says the NOAA scientists, Michael McFadden. Early couple of years ago, 2022, a Pacific volcano, Tonga Hunga Hunga Pai, erupted, releasing unprecedented amounts of water vapor, which trapped heat in the atmosphere. And 4 years ago, a mandate by the International Maritime Organization required commercial tankers to switch to low-sulfur fuel sources. This reduced the amount of sulfur dioxide emissions from shipping. Sulfur dioxide is a precursor to atmospheric sulfates that reflect sunlight and contribute to bright trails of clouds behind ships. They reflect heat back out into space. Fewer of these bright trails could potentially lead to a small increase in global warming. But even with these factors, their inputs still don't quite add up to the amount of ocean warming we're experiencing, says McFadden. Parts of the northern Atlantic, for example, are currently extraordinarily warm for reasons still not well understood. Or at all, maybe. Which raises our next question. When will Florida be underwater? Possible answer comes from a TV station in Orlando, quoting Professor Emeritus of Planetary Sciences, Dr. Joseph Donahue. He's at the University of Central Florida, and he said sea levels are rising about 4 millimeters a year. He expects that number to increase quickly. That's what he told the TV station. Quote, the global climate models, which are the only insight we have into future climate, all project that global sea level will continue to accelerate in the rate of rise, and that sea levels by 2100 will be over 1 meter higher than present, 3.1 feet, and could be much more if parts of the West Antarctica ice collapses. That's the worst case scenario. If that happens, it could be 2 meters or more. Some of the worst case projections say it could be 2 meters by 2100, and certainly by another century, Dr. Donahue says. He said 1 meter used to be an outrageous suggestion, but it's now what most of the climate models suggest. And if that becomes reality, it will impact a large portion of Florida. See, there is such a thing as justice. A 1 meter rise inundates about 10% of Florida, and that's mostly in the south and southwest, Dr. Donahue said. These projections are already starting to have impacts on people living in the state. Even the insurance companies are starting to realize that it's going to be harder and harder to get a mortgage and insurance on a Florida coastal property, says Dr. Donahue. And Venezuela may be the first nation in modern history to lose all of its glaciers. Climate scientists have just downgraded its last one to an ice field. It's also from the BBC. The International Cryosphere Climate Initiative, the ICCI, says on X, Twitter to you and me, that the South American nation's only remaining glacier, the Humboldt in the Andes, had become too small to be classed as a glacier. Venezuela has lost at least 6 other glaciers in the last century, with global average temperatures rising due to climate change. Ice loss is increasing, helping to raise sea levels around the world, or as Wolf Blitzer would say, around the world. There's not been much ice cover on the last Venezuelan glacier since the 2000s, says Dr. Carolyn Klassen, a glaciologist at Durham University. Quote, Dr. Klassen, now it's not being added to, so it's been reclassified as an ice field, unquote. Back in March, researchers at the University of Los Andes in Colombia told Agence France-Presse the glacier had shrunk from 1.7 square miles to about 215,000 square feet. Luis Daniel Yambi, an ecologist at that university, told The Guardian it had now shrunk to less than that. There's no global standard for the minimum size a body of ice must be to qualify as a glacier. The U.S. Geological Survey says a commonly accepted guideline is around just about 1 million square feet. One study published a couple of years ago suggested the glacier shrank to less than this sometime between 2015 and 2016, though NASA still considered it Venezuela's last glacier about 6 years ago. A couple of definitions for those who like them. A couple of glaciologists with the ICCI and the International Center for Integrated Mountain Development explain, quote, glaciologists recognize a glacier as an ice mass that deforms under its own weight. I know, sounds like somebody who's running for president. Professor Mark Maslin, a professor of Earth System Sciences at University College London, said a nice field like the Humboldt, which is about three American football fields, quote, is not a glacier. Glaciers are ice that fills valleys. That's the definition. And so I would say, Venezuela has no glaciers whatsoever, unquote. Last December, the Venezuelan government announced a project to cover the remaining ice with a thermal blanket that it hoped would stem or reverse the thawing process. But the move drew criticism from local climate scientists who warned that the covering could contaminate the surrounding habitat with plastic particles as it degraded. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Won't you show us some pity? I am all alone, alone in this big city. I'm just a poor, poor baby who's lost in a wood. Lady, 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 be so good.
Of the godly. The Guardian newspaper and television station in New Orleans, WWL, have obtained a long-suppressed 8.5-hour deposition of a 92-year-old Catholic priest charged with physically overpowering and raping a boy in a New Orleans church in 1975. Taken in 2020 as part of a civil lawsuit demanding damages from him and the church, clergyman Lawrence Hecker provides in the deposition the most complete account yet of how the U.S.'s second oldest archdiocese spent much of its recent history taking extreme measures to keep the public finding out about his abusive past. The questioning, which the church has fought in court to keep hidden for years, also reveals steps the city's last four archbishops took to help him avoid accountability for decades. Eventually, law enforcement officials were able to obtain an indictment charging Hecker with rape, kidnapping, and other crimes in connections with an accusation that he strangled a teenage student at a school for boys interested in becoming priests, unconscious, and sodomized him. A team of psychiatrists recently determined Hecker was mentally incompetent to stand trial, but a judge has not yet ruled on whether he intends to adopt that finding, which would probably delay the case for months, if not longer. That could be decisive in a case involving a defendant in his 90s. Meanwhile, the case has since given rise to an inquiry to determine whether the Archdiocese of New Orleans presided over, quote, widespread sexual abuse of minors dating back decades that was covered up and not reported to law enforcement, unquote. That's the way Louisiana State Police troopers described the investigation in a recent search warrant that court records show was served on the church as part of an investigation into alleged child sex trafficking. The Guardian and WWL this week published a report breaking down what the outlets consider to be the weightiest revelations of Hecker's deposition. One, it may never be possible to know how many children he abused after his ordination in 1958. Hecker pleaded the Fifth Amendment 117 times during his deposition. That's about once every 4 minutes. His history of complaints spans the entire U.S. church abuse scandal. Abuse allegations against him generally came in clusters around the major milestones in the U.S. reckoning with Catholic clergy sexual abuse. Advised to oust Hecker from the clergy in 2002 and never did. Hecker admitted to a federal crime with no statute of limitation, then tried to take it back. During one of the more notable exchanges during the deposition, Hecker replied yes when he was asked, "You would agree that some of this sexual molestation occurred on out-of-town trips out of the state of Louisiana, correct?" Hecker apparently soon realized what he admitted to, frantically saying, I invoke my Fifth Amendment rights. It just so happens that taking children across state lines for the purposes of sexually molesting them is a federal crime with no statute of limitations. He has not been charged in connection with any federal offense. Hecker is one of many living retired New Orleans priests facing credible abuse allegations. One in five, according to certain reports. Hecker claims he believed celibacy meant only avoiding women. He said the church taught him that priests could honor their promise of celibacy simply by ensuring they were never alone with a woman in private. In fact, quoting Hecker, "We were encouraged to be with younger people, especially younger boys, in the hopes that they would want to become priests." Unquote. News of the Godly. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Mother of mine. Any man who loves his mother
is man enough for me? Brightening her hours, sending her flowers, though it's no anniversary. Many men want fame and fortune, it's gold they love to see. But I'd say a man who loves his mother is man enough for me.
Mother of mine.
Many men love dogs and kittens and pet them constantly. But show me a man who loves his mother.
His mother.
As much as she wants to be. And I'll show you a man who is man enough for me.
Mother.
From New Orleans, this is LaShoa Now.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Over the past few years, our planet has become increasingly circled by Starlink, OneWeb, and other mega constellation satellites. This from space.com. The emergence of these mega constellations offers great benefits for humanity, but there's also substantial cost, including a growing imposition on astronomy. It's the view of David Koplow, professor of law at Georgetown University Law Center in Washington. Quote him, "We're just beginning to appreciate how bad the disruption can be for land-based and space-based telescopes, and as more and more satellite overflights occur, the problems will only intensify," Koplow told Inside Outer Space. Quote, "The world has mostly been assuming that the relevant international law basically allows the satellite companies to do whatever they want in space, while forcing the observatories to adapt as well as they can," Koplow said. "But in reality, the legal regime is not so one-sided," according to Koplow. Quote, "Astronomers also have legal rights to free use of space, and they need not stand by idly while their profession is damaged," unquote. He pointed out that in 2019, the world of optical and radio astronomy changed abruptly and massively when the first big batch of SpaceX's Starlink satellites launched in low Earth orbit. That's, of course, Elon Musk's outfit, SpaceLink. Quote, "Jolted by the sudden brightness of those spacecraft and alarmed by the prospect of their legions of successors, observatories scrambled to respond," unquote, Koplow. "They did so by studying and documenting the true dimensions of the problem, beginning to invent or conceptualize mitigation measures, and entering into discussions with SpaceX and other companies." Quote, "Some astronomers see this as a true hair-on-fire emergency, heralding irretrievable losses to space science. Others present a more sanguine face, depicting this as yet another challenge to be surmounted in surveying a decreasingly pristine sky," unquote. That said, the astronomical community is related that the time and the financial costs of conducting effective astronomy will rise considerably, Koplow said, and that, quote, "some important data will simply be irretrievable with concomitant losses for science and the future exploitation, exploration, and use of space." Overall, Koplow continued, "the thesis is that a better balance must be struck between these competing types of space activities without ceding to either a comprehensive right to proceed in disregard of the key functions of the other, unquote. He acknowledged that some satellite companies have voluntarily invested considerable corporate talent and money in efforts to reduce their interference with astronomy. But he says these voluntary measures are not adequate to solve the problem. They're not durable, they're not reliable, and they've not been adopted by all the companies. A stronger response is necessary. Who are you looking at? NASA, this is a different story. NASA delayed the crewed debut mission for the Boeing Starliner at the beginning of this week, just 2 hours before the scheduled launch at Kennedy Space Center. After that last-minute delay, a NASA contractor is warning the space agency that potentially disastrous problems still may lurk in the Atlas V rocket. Space agency contractor ValveTech publicly called for the launch to be put on hold until the Starliner is deemed safe and warned of a potential disaster. The delay was ordered to replace a pressure regulation valve on the Atlas V rocket's liquid oxygen tank. NASA attempts another launch as soon as May 17th. NASA stated Monday's launch was called off because of the, quote, oscillating behavior of the valve during pre-launch operations, unquote. During preparations, the valve was closed to dampen the buzzing. Oscillating behavior. But it happened again twice during fuel removal operations. ValveTech sees this oscillating behavior as a possible symptom of a large problem. President of ValveTech said in a statement, as a valued NASA partner and as valve experts, we strongly urge them not to attempt a second launch due to the risk of a disaster occurring on the launch pad. According to media reports, a buzzing sound indicating the leaking valve was noticed by someone walking by the Starliner minutes before launch. This sound could indicate the valve has passed its life cycle. NASA, he continued, needs to redouble safety checks and re-examine safety protocols to make sure the Starliner is safe before something catastrophic happens to the astronauts and to the people on the ground. Unquote. Him. Starliner's first crewed launch was initially scheduled for 2017. Development delays and technical problems pushed back the launch until this month. The delays have cost Boeing $1.5 billion in charges. ValveTech's concerns carry the weight that a disaster would endanger the lives of the astronauts, Barry Wilmore and Sunita Williams, as well as people on the ground. Boeing's quality control woes would be escalated to an astronomic scale, far beyond a blown-out door plug on an Alaskan Airlines flight, shoddily built airliners, and two dead whistleblowers. It's a smart, smart, smart world. And now some news in a related way about our friend and foe, AI. TikTok intends to begin labeling AI-generated images and videos that are uploaded to its video sharing service. TikTok is starting to automatically label AI-generated content when it's uploaded from certain other platforms. To do this, we're partnering with the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, your C2PIA, and becoming the first video sharing platform to implement their content credentials technology, unquote, the company. The Chinese-owned short-form video platform, yes, the Chinese own it, said it plans to extend the feature to audio-only content soon. TikTok already labels AI-generated content made inside the app and requires realistic AI to be labeled as such by creators. To what degree the latter is effective is debatable. Content Credentials was created by C2PA, which is co-founded by Arm, BBC, Intel, Microsoft, TruePic, Adobe, and Microsoft. They put Microsoft in there twice, so they must have helped really create it. Its goal is to form an open, royalty-free technical standard to fight against disinformation. Oh, now you're against it. The technology works as a watermark by attaching metadata to content, which TikTok can use to instantly recognize and label as AI made it. Quote, they tell you who made it, when it was made, edits that were made, and whether AI was used or not, says the Adobe chief trust officer. There's a job you wanted when you're in high school, right? The trust officer of Adobe compared it to a nutrition label for content. There's growing concern globally, as you know, regarding human ability to decipher deepfakes, whether it's remote IT worker job applicants, scammers out for money, or pornography. Just this week, the internet was entertained by a stream of AI-generated images of celebrities at the Met Gala who weren't there. The fakes were so realistic that even the mom of pop star Katy Perry was fooled. Even Katy Perry's mom, ladies and gentlemen. The AI-generated fake photos in the Met Gala are a low-stakes prelude for what's going to happen between now and the elections, observed one U.S.-based individual. That's the British tech journal, The Register, quoting one U.S.-based individual. That's where journalism is today. Microsoft Threat Analysis Center manager Clint Watts warned last month that deep fake election subversion is disturbingly easy. Microsoft should know its VASO 1 tool is considered too dangerous to be released due to ethical considerations. They weren't too ethical to be listed twice in that list of owners and creators. But that's not a clue. And now, here are four words you probably didn't expect to be hearing today. A vast subsea nuclear graveyard. It's planned to hold Britain's burgeoning piles of radioactive waste, and it's set to become the biggest, long-lasting, and most expensive infrastructure project ever undertaken in the UK. This from The Telegraph. The scheme has been delayed for so long, Britain now needs to excavate tunnels through 14 square miles of rock to create the massive underground caverns that will hold radioactive waste accumulated through seven decades of civilian nuclear power. The project is now predicted to take more than 150 years to complete. You know, kids 500 years from now, we'll wonder, how'd they do the pyramids and how did they do the nuclear thing? Lifetime costs of about $83 billion in today's money, is according to the latest estimates from scientists at Nuclear Waste Services, the government-owned company that's designing the project. That price puts it at or close to the top of the table for giant UK infrastructure projects. $58 billion for the next nuclear power station, Hinkley Point C. $75 billion for the London to Birmingham rail line. Those are the UK's two biggest construction projects to date. Chief scientific advisor of the project said, quote, we've had 70 years of nuclear activities in the UK, mainly civilian nuclear, but also defense and industrial nuclear, that's generated a lot of waste. Forecast to be 26 million cubic feet by the time the storage facility is built. So, yes, says Neil Hyatt, the chief scientific advisor. Yes, it's going to be big, unquote. The waste alone will need space equivalent to at least 8 Royal Albert Halls. The caverns will also have to be bigger than the waste, and the tunnels will be extra, so the UK will need to dig out maybe double that volume of rock. The final tally will be bigger because those estimates include, they don't include, much of the waste that will be generated by the next generation of nuclear power now being planned. The costs come without any decision on where the geological disposal facility, your GDF, might be built. But after 5 decades of ministerial prevarication, the sites have at least been whittled down to 2. In both spots, the idea is to sink a massive shaft on land up to 35,000 feet deep and then dig horizontal tunnels several miles out under the sea. There, huge vaults will be excavated in the impermeable clays and mudstones that scientists hope could provide a lasting place for Britain's nuclear legacy. Keyword, hope. Once filled with nuclear waste, they would be backfilled with cement and then sealed forever. They hope. The UK is having to go to such extreme measures partly because of the nature of radioactivity. Not only is it lethal, but as we all know, it lasts a long time. Plutonium takes 24,000 years for its radioactivity to decline by just half. Uranium-238, it takes 4.5 billion years. That's what we're playing around with, folks. 4.5 billion years. Whatever is done with it, the UK's nuclear waste will remain deadly well after our civilization has disappeared. Question their use of the word civilization, of course, but we need to protect it from future generations for about 300,000 years. That's as long as humans have existed. And we're doing so great so far. He said we're talking about a piece of infrastructure that's going to go with us on a journey into the future. Again, with a journey. As far forward in time as Homo sapiens has existed. And it's been a good existence so far, hasn't it? The operation, says Hyatt, was never going to be cheap, locking away a huge volume of waste and making it secure for eons. For most of this century, successive ministers of the British government were claiming the GDF, your GDF, could be built for around $15 billion. Then, 7 years ago, just after the new nuclear power plant, Hinkley C, had been commissioned, the agency was allowed to publish their revised estimates with a new upper limit of $66 billion. In today's money, it'll be worth just as much billions of years from now, won't it? I think so. British infrastructure projects are, however, according to the Telegraph, scarily unpredictable beasts. The rail line from London to Manchester went from $47 billion to more than $125 billion before it was cut back last year. Similarly, that nuclear power station, also under construction, was originally costed at $11 billion way back in 2007. And the latest figure, $56 billion, is likely not to be the last price hike. $11 billion to $58 billion for a nuclear power station. It's cheap and easy, infant. An emeritus professor of energy policy at Greenwich University, Steve Thomas, He's an expert in nuclear economics and policy, points out that the Brits have been building lots of rail lines and power stations, never a giant nuclear waste site thousands of feet beneath the sea. It has to be built up to 3,300 feet below ground. That's a lot of rock to shift, Thomas says. These estimates are no more than a wild guess. Clean, safe, too cheap to meter. Our friend the atom. And that just leaves this. The apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Jerry Seinfeld has issued an apology to his good friend Howard Stern. After telling fellow comics Dana Carvey and David Spade, they now have a podcast, that the self-proclaimed king of all media, Howard Stern, has been outflanked, his word, by other comedy podcasts, and that the two hosts of the Fly on the Wall podcast, Carvey and Spade, are, quote, better than him now, unquote. Seinfeld was the week's guest on the May 8th episode of the comedy podcast headed by Saturday Night Live alums Carvey and Spade. When the topic of conversation moved to the podcast format itself, Seinfeld said longtime talk radio host Stern has been at it for years, since 1975. When he started at Boston University's radio station. Quote, Howard Stern invented this, right? Seinfeld said of the format, but we're better than him now. Howard is interesting. Howard is a great interview. But comedy chops? I mean, can we speak candidly? Unquote. Carvey agreed to allow the requested candor, but Spade shouted no. Carvey then said, well, he's got Robin Quivers, and Robin is a big part of how he's funny. Seinfeld shot back, yeah, they're all great, but let's face it, he's been outflanked by some very, and yourselves, I mean, absolutely. This show, Comedy Podcasts, this is the best one on the air, because you guys play nice together. It's smooth, you're not jumping on each other, which is annoying to listen to. Of podcasting, Seinfeld also said, who knew there was a market? Who knew people wanted to get to know us? Who gets the credit for figuring it out? Make us laugh. How interesting do you think you are? He added. You're not that interesting, okay? You're not. When you're funny, you're worth it. This is my line, which you know. You know me. But you know that I draw that line. If you're not that funny, we're not that interested in you. Unquote. Seinfeld. The comments about Stern caught fire online. Seinfeld issued a statement to Entertainment Weekly. He walked back what he said about Stern and his show. Quote, I really feel bad for what I said about my friend Howard Stern, talking about the glut of comedy podcasts, the statement read. I meant to say he must feel surrounded, but I said outflanked, which sounded terrible and insulting. Continuing to quote, and of course, none of these little shows are any threat to his giant show. Anyway, it was bad, and I'm sorry, Howie. I still love you. Please forgive me. Unquote. Jerry Seinfeld. Anything that former football star Tom Brady says draws headlines, especially with the former Hall of Fame quarterback recently teasing another NFL comeback. But the retired signal caller is apologizing for what others have said in relation to him. According to Us Weekly, recently speaking with ex-wife Gisele Bündchen over what she deemed disparaging comments in Netflix's Tom Brady roast, which saw a slew of comedians and former colleagues poke fun at the Super Bowl champion's on- and off-field career. Bündchen, who shares two kids with Brady, was referenced multiple times during the special, with comedians Kevin Hart, he's so funny, and Nikki Glaser notably joking about her 2022 divorce from the quarterback. That was a high-profile split that hung over his final season. The jokes included references to Bunchen's new partner, a professional jiu-jitsu trainer. Giselle and Tom had a no disparaging remarks rule when it came to speaking about each other or their marriage and divorce, said Us Weekly. She was definitely offended and upset about the comments made at the roast. She thinks her new relationship should have been off limits. But Tom did reach out to Giselle to apologize to her. They're cordial and only communicate about the kids. Unquote. Brady, who reportedly lacked full knowledge of which jokes would be aired at the special, appeared visibly uncomfortable during some of the comments regarding Bunchen. And maybe all of the comments by Hart. Who knows? Now we go to Ireland. Former Donegal priest Eamon Crossan from Letterkenny was sentenced this week for crimes committed against a minor. Father Crossan, a former priest of the Diocese of Raphoe, appeared at Letterkenny Circuit Court via video link, where a 5-year sentence was imposed on him. In the wake of the sentencing, Monsignor Kevin Gillespie reiterated an apology on behalf of the diocese. Monsignor Gillespie said, quote, on behalf of the diocese and with a deep sense of shame for his actions, I sincerely reiterate my policy to the victim, conscious that the quest for justice is only one part of the journey of healing. I nevertheless hope that the vindication provided by today's sentencing will in some way bring support and consolation to them, their family, and friends. End of quote. Start of journey. Apple, you've heard of them, is apologizing for an iPad that was supposed to celebrate the creative possibilities of its newest, priciest tablet. Instead, the company received vocal blowback for appearing to destroy beloved physical tools used by artists. The ad, released after the company announced its newest iPad lineup, showed a massive hydraulic press destroying a mountain of supplies used to create music, paintings, sculptures, clothing, and writing. It flattened a record player, a piano, buckets of paints, journals, a camera, and drawing board. After about 45 seconds of destruction and one big splatter, the press pulled up to reveal a tiny iPad. The goal was to show how much the iPad is now capable of. Instead, it offended many of the same creatives it was trying to sell the device to. Quote, our goal is always to celebrate the myriad ways users express themselves and bring their ideas to life through iPad. We missed the mark with this video, and we're sorry, said Tor Myron, Apple's VP of Marketing Communications. According to Ad Age, the ad called Crush will not have any kind of run on TV. But it's still on Apple's official YouTube page, has already had 1 million views so far. Critics called the new ad wasteful and disrespectful. Some were upset that Apple appeared to be destroying perfectly good art supplies. They could have donated them. Most were offended that they valued the more analog ways of creating art, especially when tools like AI are being used to automate things like writing, music, and illustration. And finally, you're familiar with the term member FDIC. It's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation that insures, kinda, that our banks are safe and obeying certain rules. Well, the chair of the FDIC, Martin Gruenberg, apologized to his staff this week. An investigation by a law firm confirmed a report that sexual misconduct, lewd behavior, and retaliatory administrative practices were rampant at the federal banking regulator. Sexual misconduct and lewd behavior at the banking regulator. Reconsidering your career choices? This is a quote. To anyone who had experienced sexual harassment or other misconduct at the FDIC, I again want to express How very sorry I am, Grunberg wrote. I also want to apologize for any shortcomings on my part. He said the investigation undertaken by a law firm presented a sobering look inside the FDIC, and he accepted his findings and recommendations. And a reason to look forward to this week? The report is expected to be released publicly Tuesday afternoon. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this particular voice-addled edition of Le Show. Back, hopefully with a full voice, next week, same time, same station, on your radio side of your life, or on the private side of your life, on your audio device of choice, whenever you want to hear it. It would be just like you wouldn't have to keep yelling at the radio, take a lozenge! Promise. Kinda. It'd be great to have you back. Like Jerry Seinfeld says to Howard Stern, I love you, babe. The email address for this program. Your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, the playlist of the music you hear here, and a whole bunch of stuff to listen to, watch, and read, all at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, Pam Halstead, and especially to Thomas Walsh at WWNO for help. Mucho help with today's show. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long. From the Crescent City.